I'm Helen Marshall, and this is the Diary of a CLO. I hope no one's listening, but if you are, definitely share it.
In this conversation, I'm joined by Dean Leek, performance consultant, sports psychologist and coach, who has previously worked with Team GB as a talent development manager and now spends his time helping organisations to adopt a healthy, high-performance mindset. Dean is focused on improving decision-making, trust, belonging and empathy amongst the teams he works with. This conversation is really insightful and will help you to formulate how you think about high performance and empathy at work. Enjoy. Dean, hi, and welcome to Diary of a CLO. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Absolute privilege to be invited onto the podcast. And I don't think I've ever actually been interviewed by a chief learning officer. And you know that I talk about imposter syndrome. So it's on fire right now.
You'll be absolutely fine. I'm not that terrible. I'm really excited though about our conversation. Thank you so much for being willing to come on the podcast, particularly because I know that you've got a real focus on creating environments for what you term healthy high performance, so we can dig into all of that as we go. And it's not only something that kind of I'm personally interested in, but I know a lot of people who listen to the podcast will be really interested in this as well. But I suppose before we do dig into that, I guess can you tell me a little bit about yourself and how did you end up in the space that you're in and that kind of talent development space more broadly?
Yeah, absolutely. So I call myself like a leadership culture performance coach, and that largely stems from my background of working in elite high performance sport. So I worked for many years in Olympic and Paralympic sport, where I had the real privilege of working with athletes on their mindset and mental skills, and more latterly towards the end of my career within sport was working as a head of talent and coaching. So to your point there, my role was working with a bunch of wonderful people trying to figure out that question of how do we create an environment where we unleash the potential of athletes in various different sports so that they increase probabilities of going to win Olympic and Paralympic medals at the games. And I had a moment in 2020, like a lot of people during COVID, where I was reflecting on what I wanted to do and decided that I wanted to try and increase my knowledge and experience in different sectors, which has kind of taken to me into all sorts of different contexts in the public, private sector, meeting people like you, connecting with awesome people and doing some stuff around leadership development and culture.
What you're saying there is it feels a little bit tricky because you're doing some awesome stuff, but then you're applying it in very different situations. So obviously working with elite athletes to working in the public sector, massive leap and jump between how you potentially might approach some of that stuff from the outside in. Anyway, are they miles apart? How do you approach those kind of different situations?
Well, I think it's a really good point. And actually, when I deliver keynotes or I go and do some work with organizations, the first thing I say is that I genuinely don't know your context. I actually don't really know what I'm doing. And my job really is to try and figure out your context. We'll get onto this a little bit later, but when you look at success and you look at continuous improvement, I think it's like the compound interest of curiosity. So it sounds stupid, but I pretty much just ask loads of silly questions to really try and understand it and avoid, to your point, going into context and saying, I think I've got the answers based on the fact that I've worked, you know, in Olympic sport doesn't mean that, you know, I have a formula. And actually, it's the opposite of that. So I try to take quite a humble and empathetic approach to try and figure out where some of your problems are. And then we can kind of work together on how we might move forward. So that's how I typically approach it.
I really like that phrase of compound interest of curiosity. It's that kind of accumulation of listening. And I think listening is so important, particularly in the L&D space, and recognizing that actually you might have bias going into a situation, whether that's bias of previous experience and your lived experience, or bias of a perception of the room in which you're about to enter and the industry in which that maybe organization operates. So I think that having the curiosity to think and stop and listen and be open to the opinion of others sounds quite important to you.
Curiosity, and you're right, it stems from and is enabled from you having emotional awareness. So I call it like emotional flexibility or emotional fitness. So if you want to become curious, you need to recognize in yourself when you are inevitably as a human being, which is normal, right? Going into states of confirmation bias or my own belief system. That's actually quite a hard skill because we can only see the world through our own lens. So the skill is being able to take a step back and say, I kind of recognize that. And actually, that's quite healthy because it's enabled us to survive. However, how do I get myself back into the present moment and really focus on the thing that is in front of me right here? And that's actually a real muscle to be built. You know, clearly, if you work in a coaching and consulting context, you'd hope that's a skill that you've nurtured over a period of time. But I see that's a large part of what I do, rather than, as I said, kind of come in and say, hey, I've got all the answers here. And we've spoken about imposter syndrome before. And for me, that crippled me for many years, imposter syndrome. And actually, over a period of time, as I've changed my relationship with it, I've seen that it's actually a super strength. It's that ability to go, actually, I don't know what I'm doing. I am a bit of a fake. I am a bit of a fraud. I don't know your context, but I'm here to learn, right? I'm here to get interested.
That's a really, again, a really interesting way of looking at imposter syndrome as well, in terms of being very situational to the people that you're approaching and in front of. And I suppose there's almost an element of vulnerability in that, in saying to people, I don't really know much about you or the situation. Do you think that plays into it at all?
Like, you're reading my mind. Vulnerability, I think, is something that's often really underplayed. For me, vulnerability isn't a weakness. It's not giving in to people's opinions. It's not pretending that you don't know what you're doing. That's not true. And actually, it's the opposite. You know, I think vulnerability is a genuine super strength in human beings. And it's something that when I work with organizations, I try to tease out in leaders, because I came across this statement recently, and it's that vulnerability comes from the Latin meaning wound. So vulnerability is a willingness to be wounded. And it takes quite a lot of courage to be wounded, right? But we know that when we are wounded and we develop a muscle for being in situations that might be uncomfortable, we know that's when you start to build emotional fitness, emotional flexibility. It builds a bit of toughness, actually, in the environment, because we know that the workplace and life is full of challenge, it's full of volatility, it's full of ambiguity. That's not going away. So if we try and push it away, that's actually just going to compound the fact that we're not dealing with it. So vulnerability actually is a real strength. And for me, that's where growth begins, is when you can lead into that vulnerability. You open yourself up to that, you know, emotional injury, and it's actually going to build you into a really resilient individual.
It's interesting that you've spoken about that, because I read a report from Deloitte recently that was focused on well-being in the workplace. And one of the things it was looking at was that kind of representation or role modeling of talking about when things haven't gone great for leadership, particularly C-suite, and that being kind of spoken about within a broader business. And in the survey, I think it was about 72% of C-suites or senior leadership suggested that they were great at role modeling when things hadn't gone great, and they were being vulnerable about that within their business. Whilst the other side of that was their employees, only 16% of them said that that was accurate, and they felt like their C-suite and senior leadership were actually role modeling. So there's an interesting tension there between maybe what leadership are thinking they are doing to role model, and how they might be thinking they're showing up, and people actually recognizing that they're actually doing that, and whether the messages are, I want to say, trickling down, but are actually reaching everybody in the way that maybe they think they are, and clearly they're not. And I know you are in that field of leadership and kind of leadership development as well, and getting people to think about what good leadership looks like. You've obviously just mentioned that being willing to be wounded and being vulnerable in those situations can be useful. But tell me a little bit about your experience of leadership more broadly.
Yeah, and it's a good point. It's funny, isn't it? When you ask the question, who thinks they've got self-awareness, you see most hands go up. But often, you know, that isn't often the case, because it's a real skill that, you know, takes time to develop. I think also, I appreciate we're jumping around, but they're all sort of like really interconnected areas here. I wonder whether this is a generational thing. And I think that I've kind of been victim of this before. And I think we'll get onto authenticity earlier, but we keep hearing these signals, and maybe it's because I see it more on social media, this idea that we should really trust our gut and our instinct and really sort of lean into ourselves. And I really think that's important, because that's how you start to develop a sense of like what's important to you and what your values are. But I do think there's real value in getting that temperature check from the people that you spend your time with, the people that really matter, and your colleagues. And to your point, actually asking employees, like, how am I showing up? We're social animals. We're not individuals that operate in silos, like we're interconnected with others. So let's actually get a balance of looking at like what's important and what we value, but actually let's actively reach out and seek that perspective, because as you've said there's a perception gap, right?
Mm.
You know, and you see that in leaders, and you've just articulately, brilliantly shown that.
It's really interesting shifting from just trusting your gut on things to actually saying, well, am I able to rationalize or reason what my gut's telling me by seeking advice or information from those that are around me? I'll share an example of when this was really useful in terms of someone from the outside. I have this kind of sense of how I am and how I'm showing up in a situation, and someone outside of the situation shared a very different perspective on a situation with me and made me see it in a very different way. And I was kind of trusting myself that I was showing up correctly in this particular situation, but actually someone else's perception was, maybe you're not, like, think about it and reframe it in a different way. And that was hugely beneficial. So I think there's definitely something to be said for always checking in with those that are around you, particularly if you're a leader, I suppose, and a people manager, and being able to say, you know, is how I'm showing up right? And then being able to feed that back in the opposite direction as well.
Precisely. And I think if we go with that thread that human beings are social animals, fundamentally what we do is we copy people. So particularly when it comes to authority and power, we copy our leaders. So we're pretty much, when you look at culture, and there's lots of complexity to that, but often the leader's behaviors is mirrored in how the organization is and is being. So to your point around the importance of vulnerability in leadership, it's fundamental. I've seen this with leaders whereby they are closed and they, you know, perhaps don't show much transparency or openness and vulnerability. And you can see the environment being quite closed. It lacks creativity. It lacks that constant striving for growth. But when a leader has the courage to say that I don't know, you almost give the permission and the enablement in others to say, well, that's okay. Because most of us know that we don't know. You know, we deal with such complex problems that it would be stupid to think that we know. There's no binary cause and effect answers to a lot of these things. It's working within the complexity and looking at options and you know, being critical in how we explore things. And that often starts from leaders saying, I don't know. And that's a very human-centered form of leadership in my eyes, and something that, to your point, I think this is a report from McKinsey, you know, with all of this talk and implementation of AI, technology, digitalization, things changing, you would think that human skills would actually be on the incline. But the research is showing that they're going to need an increase of 30% of empathy and compassion to create a really high performing organization, which I think is quite interesting, because you would kind of think it would go the other way.
Yeah, definitely resonates in the L&D space as well, in terms of that return to human centric design, human centered anything really, human skills, and what that means for the future of work, essentially. So it definitely rings true in this space as well. And I think it's, you know, it's not only a symptom of the past few years and that need for human connection more specifically, but actually, how do you then be more human and lean into those things that make you who you are in the face of things that are artificial and potentially increase kind of productivity, but in a way that doesn't have, I guess, the human at the core focus? That must be an interesting tension for people as well. Have you felt any, in the people that you're coaching or speaking to, have you felt any tension from them in terms of how they then lean into those more human skills or develop those human skills in the face of nervousness about what AI means for them?
Really good question. And it kind of goes into your introduction around healthy high performance cultures and how do you build a healthy high performing team? Because, you know, I'm quite deliberate around this language. You know, I've come from a high performance sport background, which is about athletes and systems winning medals. It's about success. It's about growth. And by the way, I think that's really important. I think we should be unashamedly in the drive of high standards. I think, you know, human beings want to grow and we want challenge, and that's important. But how do we do it in a healthy way? So when people say, what's a healthy high-performing team or healthy high-performance culture? I mean, I think the thing that's most obvious is that there's no recipe. Okay, it depends on the context. So I'm not going to come into an organization and say, here's a formula, and if you apply A plus B plus C plus D, you're going to get this wonderful environment. It doesn't work like that. And actually, I think what's really interesting is that when you think about healthy, high-performing teams, what a lot of people think that it is it's about happiness and it's about striving for a harmonious environment. And I don't think that's true. Yes, I think teams are energized, they're successful. Yes, I think they're really committed. But I think the one thing that is a common factor in all teams is that they're inherently dysfunctional. Okay, they are full of conflicts, they're dysfunctional, they don't actually operate in particularly great ways, particularly when teams are coming together. So I think healthy, high-performing teams are less focused on happiness and they're more focused on developing a shared purpose, developing a sense of belonging, developing a sense of connection. And I think the thing that people really dislike is the sense of uncertainty. And for me, the medicine isn't trying to remove the uncertainty, okay? It's how do you collectively create the sense of shared uncertainty. This is the point earlier, challenge, complexity, ambiguity is not going away. So how do we start to lean into that curiosity, the imperfection, to start to work with that? For me, we can get into what maybe are some of the principles of what a good team looks like. You can start to explore like what's unhealthy look like. It might sound obvious, but some of the things that I observe are, you'll know this from LNOD, right? It's things that we would track. But you see great people leaving. Okay, that would be an obvious symptom of an unhealthy culture. It's absent of feedback. It's absent of really truthful, direct, good feedback. And we can explore what that is, right? A big thing is unresolved conflict. There's a conflict avoidance. That there's some tough issues that need discussing, but we're not going to go there because maybe that's not very comfortable. There's a fear of speaking up. You know, people aren't actually speaking their truth or bringing their own creativity. And I think a big thing for me, and actually what's interesting, is that when we think about creating an engaged and motivated workforce, we tend to go to the sort of the trust and belonging, the connection. And I think that is fundamental, right? But what I often see is lack of clarity, indecisiveness and inaction. That creates a huge amount of uncertainty and frustration in people. And I'd say probably one more just to add to that is you see in unhealthy cultures, blame cultures. I talk about one of the biggest kind of tragedies of poor cultures is cynicism. As humans, we're cynical, right? We are so cynical. How do you switch cynicism into optimism? That's the real key in cultures, I think.
I mean, you've touched on so many things there that we can get into. Kind of so much good stuff. The thing that's standing out for me, I mean, there's a few tricky words in what you're saying there in terms of dysfunction and conflict. Think like conflict, especially something that people try and avoid, like you say, because they maybe just it would just be make your lives easier if you don't kind of broach the elephant in the room. But aside from that, what was interesting in your definition initially around healthy high performance was that you jumped straight to the team and how a team work together and potentially show up together and create that shared sense of uncertainty. You as an individual and healthy high performance affect you and it is defined on an individual basis before you start thinking about a team, or would it always be focused in a team situation?
This is really interesting. Good question. So I'm actually delivering a talk in a couple of weeks, which is, it's like UK Active, and it's people that are kind of in the health and fitness sector. And the title is A Healthy Nation and a Healthy Organization Starts With You. So if you want to create the change you want to see, it starts within, right? It starts within. And when it starts within, you're looking at the terms that we've talked about already, which is self-awareness. It's having clarity on what your values are. And not just that, how do you take your own sense of what's important to you? And perhaps that's something that's written down or it's written on a wall. But how do you create that into tangible behavior that you start to role model your own expectations of yourself? So I think it's actually a combination of individuals taking responsibility and ownership for the way in which they're showing up, but also that being enabled in an environment where the leaders of teams are spending time intentionally and deliberately, whether it's through some of the things that I help teams with, which is, you know, having a team health check, where you shine a light on the behaviors that are important and you reflect and you review that. But I think it's a coming together of the individual and the collective, a team becoming a group of individuals, but being rallied around and energized of this shared purpose that we spoke about.
Do you think it's where some of that initial kind of dysfunction might come from, is the fact that people show up so differently at work and potentially have different values. And I guess a second tangent to that question, and one we might want to dig into more, is how do you as an individual bring your own values and, you know, what's right for you into an organization that has a set of its own values as well? And how do those two things connect?
So in answer to your first question, I think that you see an increased level of conflict and friction that's unnecessary when you try to avoid conflict. And I would call these almost like organizational threads, or like a mindset. It's like a set of principles by which you operate, where you say kind of like, here's how we think around here, and here's our mental model of what success is. And one of those might be that friction's okay. Okay. And actually what that means is that because there's diversity of thinking, because we all come from different backgrounds, because we all have different viewpoints of the world, that's okay. So we need to sort of lean into each other's strengths and maybe see where there's some development areas that need support. How do we work that together to create a really functional team? For me, this isn't a case of actually how do you introduce conflict. It's how do you minimize unnecessary conflicts and accept that there are going to be difference in thinking and different views. And actually, that's a real positive thing for creativity. But I think if you've got that shared sort of collective mentality around it, that's a really good starting point.
Is that one that you see that you have to kind of highlight for people a lot of the time in the teams that you work with?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's kind of normalizing and saying, this is okay. I mean, I don't know any team sport or organization, whether that's private or public, that have sustainable success that are without friction. Now, the friction to be harnessed and cultivated, you need other key elements in place. You need a foundation of trust. You need leaders that are creating environments where people can experiment and fail without fear of consequence. These things are all interconnected. It goes back to that team review. You need to understand what success looks like for you, not just from an operational perspective, by the way, but from a cultural, behavioral perspective, and putting that up there and saying, how are we doing? How are we measuring ourselves against this? And having really open conversations about how we're measuring up against some of those key behaviors.
So that's something you do with teams and with businesses. Do you then upskill managers within those teams to continue that work for you within those businesses?
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly what I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And connected to that, I think this is maybe part of your second question, because I think this is really important when we start to think about connection and belonging and purpose. And I have really shifted my mindset on this, because I've always been somebody that's, I guess, kind of intuitively understood that what's important is that we create an environment of autonomy, of empowerment, that people really help shape the work that they do. And I always had this view that organizational values should be shaped by the collective, okay? But we should have lots of input into what values should look like. But what I've realized over a period of time, and this has come through just my kind of tacit experiences and mentorship and observing environments, is that where I've seen high employee engagement connected with really strong recruitment processes, good onboarding, good performance management, is when organizations can clearly articulate, based on its historical structures and experiences and pain, suffering, success that it's been through, this is what we stand for as an organization. These are our values. This is our story. This is how we do things around here. And we would love you to be a part of this. But what's also important is what matters to you. So we want to work with you to understand what our values mean to you as an individual. But also, what do you care about? Because you've come from a different background. You've got a set of values. I want to know about you. I want to know about your story. And we don't often see that done very well. It's often missing that real deep sense of human connection when it comes to people's values, their family, where they're from, what matters to them. We tend to get quite quick into process and policies and deliverables.
Mm. It's what creates a sense of belonging, right, within an organization.
It does. Yeah. And when you've got a really compelling vision and a deep sense of purpose that is rooted in the story of the organization, there's something really meaningful for employees to get engaged with. And then the skill, right, is, and this is where I call it threading. So How do you thread every part of the organization, policies, processes, people, through those values and through those principles that really connect with that sense of vision?
How often do you think that vision or that sense of what values are for a business changes for organizations? Because I'm just thinking, for those that have been around for a long time, you're talking about the story there, the history of where maybe a brand has come from, will often be vital to the future of the business. Do you think it can pivot and change direction based on what's going on in the world around you and like what, you know, is the current situation that a business is potentially dealing with? Have you seen that happen?
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't happen very often. And that's okay, because, you know, fundamentally, what is often true of organizations, ones that are successful, is that they're true to their values. They live them, you know, on a day-to-day basis, and they talk proudly about that. And I don't think there's anything wrong. But what I think there is something to be said is actually, to your point, how do you pivot sometimes, maybe in adding a value or changing a value? That there was a really good example that I came across recently, and it was with an organization, and I can't remember what the acronym was, but one of the letters was E, that stood for edge. And they created this sense of their value being edge, because the business was built on the edge of a mountain. So it was quite inspiring. And then as it's evolved over time, it's kind of turned into like, we're just like edgy and creative and we do really bold things. So they kind of like changed some of my language. Another one was a rugby team that had one of their acronyms was U, which stood for unconventional, but they've changed it to uncompromising because they've shifted their style of play. That can be quite inspiring, and it can signal a direction that perhaps a team is going in. The real key is, how is that translated into tangible behaviors? So what might I see if I was observing you? So if I was observing you, Helen, you know, in your workplace, and you were telling me the value that's most important to me is courage, I'd go, great. So if I was watching you, how would I see courage play out in your day?
And I think that is where a lot of businesses struggle with the idea of having values and it being just an idea and just posters on the wall, as people like to refer to, but not having tangible behaviors that are attached to those values. Because unless you are able to know what the value is and know how you can show up in that way to a particular word, like being courageous in the office or at work, they almost become meaningless.
It's so true. Like, we see corporate values splattered all over the wall. And I like the analogy of company values on a wall, a bit like flying an advertising banner of your values. You know, if you're not living them, then what you're doing is you're showing the world how terrible you are, because it's up there, this scene, right? But you're saying, this is what we do, but actually the behaviors don't match it. That's where you get real lack of integrity. And that's where you get really disenfranchised, you know, really disengaged workforces. So,
We've spoken about kind of self-awareness and vulnerability a little bit in our conversation, but one thing we've not really touched on yet is authenticity and what that means and how you can show up in an authentic way at work. Can you give me your definition of what being authentic means?
Can I be cheeky and ask you what your definition of authenticity is? And by the way, there's no right or wrong answer, because whenever this question's asked, we all have a different interpretation of it, and that's okay. But I'm just curious.
I'm being put on the spot now. Now I'm feeling like an imposter. My definition of authenticity is being able to feel comfortable being myself, and that means kind of not just a work version of myself, but being kind of a whole person with stuff that's going on behind the scenes, stuff that might have happened that morning, and being able to be honest and kind of open about that and feel safe in order to communicate that to other people. But then also the other part of it, which plays into what we were just speaking about, is being true to your values and knowing what's important to you and staying true to that in a way that is authentic to yourself, and you're showing up as the best version of yourself as a result of that.
Well, for being on the spot, that's a lovely definition. So now I'm curious, how often do you think that you can be your authentic self in work?
I'm very lucky to work for an organization that promotes that kind of way of thinking. So a lot of the time, I think there are always moments where you think that there's almost like that moment of hesitancy around what you do or what you say or how you say it, how you show up in a particular situation. And there are also moments where sometimes it's not okay to show up in a certain way. So you have to hold things back. And that's something I personally quite struggle with because I'm very open. I want people to be as open and trusting as I am, and it's not always the way. But it's also useful to take that step back sometimes. So I think it depends on the situation, but I feel comfortable ultimately being myself most of the time at work, which I'm very fortunate to be in that position.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I think it shows also, and the reason why I asked the question is because authenticity is kind of interconnected with the environment. So if you are in an environment where you feel like that you can be yourself, guess what? You're more likely to be yourself.
So for me, authenticity isn't about being your true self the whole time. Because when you look at the Latin definition, authenticity is about being genuine. And if we're being genuine, it's about being relatable to people. And at the heart of being relatable is empathy. Because if I'm being my true self and I'm sticking to my values, I'm not showing up for you. So for me, authenticity is absolutely having a sense of what's important to you. But it's having that flexibility to say, what's really important here? If we're talking about being genuine, is what's important to you? How do you see the world? How do we go from two individuals to us being in a partnership? And I think that's quite different to what you would typically see, which is authenticity is about being your whole self, your true self. I think there's a place for that, but I think there's a little bit more nuance to the definition.
It's interesting, isn't it? So I think there's that self-awareness of understanding and being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and then try and relate to what's going on in their environment, asking questions, being curious again, in order to be empathetic ultimately. But what happens if the person that you're speaking to doesn't have the same approach or understanding or interpretation of authenticity, or is not even empathetic themselves? How do you kind of approach that?
I think it's okay if somebody has a different perspective, belief system or viewpoint to you. The empathy isn't about changing somebody's opinion, it's about understanding their perspective. And what I tend to find is that when there's differences, and you can look at this in the context of sales, you can look at this in the context of personal relationships. It's the classic, isn't it, in a personal relationship, where often what people want to do is they want to feel heard, they want to feel included. And often once they've expressed their point of view, that's often the foundation for then coming to some type of common ground. So empathy for me is about finding some type of common ground, really understanding somebody's viewpoint, because when they feel heard, we're more likely in a position to be able to negotiate, develop a sense of plan of where how we might move forward. So it really is less about changing opinions. It's more about how can I put myself into your shoes and imagine how it might be for you? Because then if I can start to imagine what that is, I can start to connect with you. I can start to empathize that, blimey, yeah, I can really understand your perspective. You know, and actually just simple playbacks, paraphrasing what somebody says can be super powerful.
I suppose what I'm getting at more there is that does there need to be a shared culture of empathy within a business in order for it to be successful? Or do you start making those kind of, I guess, drops in an ocean yourself by being empathetic and showing up in that way for people you're leading or people that you're communicating with? And then ultimately get to that broader, this is how we show up empathetically across a business.
Yeah, because then we start to kind of look at the real depths of empathy, and we could probably do a whole podcast on this, because I think there's different types, isn't there? There's the first part of empathy, which is my ability to almost feel how you're feeling about something. So it's that real visceral sense of, wow, I feel kind of what you're going through here. And that's actually often what you typically see in the definition. I think there's more than that. There's the cognitive element of empathy as well, which is I can put myself into your shoes and understand your perspective. The final bit is almost, again, there's a real nuance in this. There's empathy, which is seeking to understand, but then there's compassion, which is I'm actually willing to help you. So to your question, yes, I think that it takes the individual to practice. It's a skill, right? It's a muscle that we build empathy. Like, we cultivate this over time. And I'll say this quite confidently at the risk that I might be wrong. I think that it should be an organization's priority to cultivate an environment of empathy, because it isn't just about creating an environment where people feel heard, you're building trust, connections, belonging. There's a real competence to empathy. You're shifting your leadership style from one that perhaps is directive to being more of a coach. You're asking good questions. You're trying to understand the problem. You know, you're inviting critical thinking. I don't know what you think, but I think that's quite key.
I think it's fundamental to any business, to, and especially in leadership, to be able to be empathetic and to put yourselves to think differently about how someone else is showing up and being that kind of that authentic version of themselves by being empathetic within a situation. So yeah, it rings true with my personal belief as well. But I think it's that broader perspective of what empathy can lead to within a business. And it leads to those things that you've been talking about throughout the recording in terms of self-awareness and building trust, I think is the biggest one there. Communicating openly. And obviously that if you track them all back, you could get to the point where empathy is the foundation stone of all of those things. So yeah, I definitely personally agree with you as well. So I'm glad that you said it with confidence, because I'm going to go with you're right. Dean, just as we head towards wrapping up, one thing I do like to ask guests is around a piece of advice that they've had in the past from somebody that was meaningful, transformative even for them, that they now share with other people to continue that kind of advice loop, as it were. So is there anything that springs to your mind that you've been told in the past that you would like to share with people listening to this podcast?
It's a great question, and I'm sure that you've primed me with this question, and if you had done, I forgot, or maybe it's a surprise, which I love as well, so it puts me on the spot. But I mean there's so many things. If I can be cheeky, there's two. I'll go with the one that always stands out to me. So I've been really privileged in my career to have been mentored by some wonderful people. I was very much kind of saved in some ways and given a real level of insight around psychology and neuroscience by my first mentor out of university, a guy called Professor Steve Peters, who wrote The Chimp Paradox. So that was a real deep dive into understanding psychology, taught me lots. But the guy that really kind of landed it for me was during a leadership course that I did back in 2017, was a guy called David Hopley, and he was the ex-head of the Special Forces. And I went to meet him in London at the HQ, and I was thinking of this big, physical, towering figure. You think of the SES Who Dares Win type characters that are at Middleton, kind of in your face a little bit. But this guy was like a gentle giant. Like his humility and his integrity and his ability to empathize and just take a real interest in me. I was going in there thinking that I'm just going to interview this guy and just take his insight. But he just leaned in and said, Dean, tell me about your family. Tell me about what's important to you. And when we got to the point of what does leadership mean? He was just really clear. He said, Dean, leadership is all about how you make people feel. And I thought, you know what? Coming from somebody who operated an organization that was dealing in the most complex environments there is on planet Earth, for him to go back to that, it really centers around that emotional connection with people that enables high performance, is something that I've always remembered. The other one really quickly was when I was doing my coaching qualifications, and I was mentored by a guy through that process, and he had very much an Eastern philosophy around things. And I said, Keith, I just have this real sense of imposter syndrome, and this was as I was starting to go out and consult. And he said, Dean, do you think the Buddha had a degree?
Great way of looking at it.
I thought, imposter syndrome's gone, and it was just brilliant how he just said that in such a calm, simple way. And yeah, we talk about qualifications, we talk about all of these things, but often people that make a difference are the ones that create a movement and inspire people through connection. So that is my answer.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I didn't prime you for that question, didn't prep you for it, but you managed to come up with three really good examples. One that people can go out and read, and then two that people can action and think about in terms of how you make people feel and those around you. And also you don't need to have imposter syndrome, because, you can just be yourself and show up in that situation as yourself. So Dean, thank you so much for sharing so openly. And I think we could have carried on talking for a long time, but we're going to call it a day there. But thank you so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate being on with you.
This podcast is powered by Thrive. We're a complete learning and skills platform creating modern learning solutions for modern businesses globally. Check us out.